Hello everyone, and a very warm welcome to a special Catholic News podcast in which we look back on Bishop Declan Lang's 23 years as Bishop of Clifton. Let me set the scene for you. It was the evening before his successor's episcopal ordination, and we were fortunate to sidestep all the intense planning and preparation for the day to come in order to sit down in the garden of the retiring Bishop of Clifton as the spring sun gave out its last. Metaphorically, the sun was setting too on Bishop Declan's years of ministry as the ninth Bishop of Clifton. It was just a matter of hours before his handover to the incoming Bishop Bosco MacDonald. So, for this podcast, it seemed apposite to take a stroll with Bishop Declan to look back over almost a quarter of a century shepherding the diocese.
Well, I suppose the logical thing to do is to start at the beginning. Now, you were born on the Isle of Wight, and I imagine island living is a little bit different. Tell us a bit about your upbringing. What was it like?
Well, you just take it for granted. You think everywhere's like the Isle of Wight. But you then discover when you go onto the mainland that things are a little different. But it was a nice place to grow up. My brother and sister were born in Birmingham. My parents moved down to the Isle of Wight in 1946, I think. My father was a local GP. I went to school on the island, primary school, and at secondary level as well. I was due to go to the Jesuits, but I failed the exam. Partly on purpose, because I didn't want to go. So I stayed on at the school where I was, and did okay there.
Yeah, and tell us a little bit about where that call came from. It's the question everybody asks, but was there ever a moment where you realised you might be called to be a priest?
I remember being asked by Derek Warlock, who was the Bishop of Portsmouth, which asked as I was going for, why do you want to be a priest? I said, I don't know. It's just a feeling I've got within me. That's the best way I can serve God and serve other people. That was it. It was just an instinct almost.
So quite natural.
Yeah.
No big road to Damascus.
No road to Damascus. I didn't follow any horses.
And so what came next then? So you were accepted. And where did you study?
I studied at Allen Hall when he was out in Hertfordshire.
Yeah. And what was that like for a boy from the Isle of Wight?
It was different. But seminaries are different in themselves as well. But when I was in the seminary, I also went to university, to Royal Holloway College, did a history degree. So that was part of my formation, because the students were fascinated by what I was doing in the seminary. And they used to ask me, why do you want to be a priest? And so I had to sort of just ponder it and think about it.
Did any of them gain an interest in the Catholic faith as a result of having a trainee priest in their midst?
Yes. One or two who I knew have since I've heard become Catholics.
Oh, wow. Wonderful. Great witness. And so you were then ordained for the Diocese of Portsmouth.
That's right.
Where was your first posting?
My first posting was Portsmouth Cathedral as the second curate and the chaplain to the Comprehensive School of St Edmunds. I did that for 4 years. Then I became Bishop Secretary to Bishop Emery for 4 years. And then I went to Bournemouth as parish priest. Also, I was an advisor for adult RE. There were two priests in the parish, and the other priest who most of the parish work advised doing the adult education.
I'm just interested, not so much a faith-based question, but have you always had a sort of love of the coast and the seaside? Has that been in your blood?
Yes. I remember saying to somebody in Abingdon, where I was parish priest, I miss the sea. They said, well, we've got the Thames. I said, the Thames is not the sea.
You wouldn't swim in it, would you?
No.
No, I know what you mean, actually. And then, you know, further down the line, obviously in 2001, you were called here to the Diocese of Clifton.
Indeed. Diocese I didn't really know anything about.
Yeah, you and I have talked a little bit about the call from the Nuncio, the Holy Father's representative in the UK. And I sort of had these grand ideas of, you know, pomp and ceremony and everything. But tell us how you accepted the offer to be Bishop of Clifton.
Well, it's very strange. In fact, somebody had phoned me one evening, and when I got, I'd been out in the parish and came back in the evening, and Janet, who was my secretary, said, you've got a number of people who have phoned in today. And one was a priest from London. So I went through the list and had an RCIA group in the evening. So I missed the London call. I was out the following day, and Janet said to me, man from London has rung again. He says he wants to talk to you straight away.
That man from London.
So I rang up and I said, the papal nuncio. And I went, oh.
What's your thinking at that point? Is it, oh my goodness.
What have I done wrong? Well, then once they saw me the following day, they came in with a bit of paper and said, "Congratulations, you've been appointed Bishop of Clifton. Sign here." I said, "What do I say?" He said, "Dear Holy Father, thank you for appointing me as bishop. I accept it."
So that was the formula of words, not "do you fancy the job" or anything?
No.
And, you know, well, we know that 23 years have followed. And I remember, I've known you for a long time, thank goodness. It's been wonderful, actually. And I've always felt that the Diocese of Clifton under your leadership has been very dynamic, very creative, very sort of confident in faith, which is absolutely to your credit. And I remember in the early days, around about 2007, you had these wonderful pastoral plans, and forgive me, you can correct me, but called to be a people of hope.
That's right.
And seeking the face of Christ.
Seeking the face of Christ was the beginning of the process. And we got parishes to reflect upon what it was to be the church for today and how they were facing up to the challenges. And you had thousands of replies, which was, not to my credit, but to credit of the people themselves, their desire to actually be active members of the church and have a deeper understanding of what it is to be a Catholic.
Well, that must have been quite prophetic, really, because if you look at the synodal pathway that we talk about now, that Pope Francis has had at a parish, at a diocesan, at a national and an international level with the two big synods in Rome, it's a similar model, isn't it? A listening model, a participatory model.
Yeah, very much the stress on listening. And the seeking the face of Christ was a matter of listening to what the people said, because I was determined that a pastoral plan should not be imposed from above, but should come up from the bottom, so people could own it. It wasn't Bishop Declan's plan, it was our plan, in which we participated.
And tell me, what's it like to be a bishop? I know there are challenges, I know there are ups and I know there are downs, but how do you look at it now, 23 years on?
When I go to primary schools and the children ask me questions, one question is always, "Do you enjoy being a bishop?" And I say, "Yes, I do. Because why be miserable?" I missed parish work, and still do. But I enjoy being bishop. There are challenges. But on the whole, people are good. And people respond to requests.
And actually, I remember the first time I actually, as a Catholic, went into a Catholic church, because I converted in my 30s, it was in Cheltenham, where my parents are from. So they're not Catholics. But I found myself in St Gregory's, where the new bishop spent some time as a parish priest.
Yes.
And I remember that those immortal words, "And Declan our bishop." So you were the first bishop that we were in communion praying for, leading the diocese, that I only knew that one town, but your name was indelible even before I met you.
Well, thinking of St Gregory's, I was in confirmation there on Saturday, my last confirmation in the diocese.
Goodness.
So there were 40 candidates.
Wow.
And it was a full church, and a good experience. The night before, I'd been in Downside for confirmation. So my confirmation programme has come to an end. It all goes over to Bishop Bosco now.
So that's a very fitting way to end, isn't it, really?
Yes.
Seeing that new blossoming faith in young people.
Yes, yes.
How important are the young people to your ministry?
They are very important, because they are the church. People say they're the church for tomorrow. They are the church for tomorrow. But actually, they're the church for today. Mm. And I think many young people are quite spiritual. They may not necessarily recognise that they are, but they have got good values and great ambition for themselves and for other people. And they have a concern, especially for the environment at the moment, and the concept of justice and peace throughout the world.
We've talked a little bit about your work in the diocese, your ministry in the diocese. I wanted to touch upon the work you've done for us at a national level for the Bishops' Conference, because obviously you've been the chair of their International Affairs Department, and not just that, within that, the chair of what we call the Holy Land Coordination, an annual pilgrimage of bishops from around the world to the Holy Land. And it's a place that I know is very dear to your heart. I've been there twice with you, which has been quite something. But now we look upon it with heavy hearts, and it's very sad. But before we come on to the specifics, tell us a bit about how that national ministry has played into your life as a bishop.
Well, going to different parts of the world, seeing the church in action, has been a very enriching experience. There's a temptation to think that the church is the same throughout the world, and you recognise that the church has got great diversity.
Mm. And of course, we talked about the Holy Land. That must be an area that's of particular interest.
Yes, it's very, as you say, it's very sad at the moment, because you know people in the Holy Land who have been directly affected. And we often said, as you know, James, on the coordination group, there's very little hope around. You've got two people living so closely to one another, and yet so distant from one another, and the whole trust has broken down. And it's going to take a lot of healing.
Yeah, and you and I have spent some time in Gaza too, and I think back to 2017 when we were there.
Yeah.
That was the only time I was there with you in that particular strip of land. And it was amazing to see the 130, very, very few Catholics and maybe 1,300 Christians out of 2.2 million people.
Yeah.
But we always see how they don't just work for themselves and minister just for that tiny group. They really help the wider community, don't they? Including kids with disabilities, orphans.
Yes. Yeah.
It's very sad to see what's happening there now, isn't it?
It's sad to know. As you say, the sisters, religious sisters, they run homes for the elderly and for the disabled. And they teach in the schools. And those houses and the schools have been hit.
Yeah. You mentioned hope there. I mean, you brought that into the diocese. It's an eternal theme, isn't it, really? Call to be a people of hope.
Yeah,
yes, absolutely.
Yeah. If we've got no hope, we're not going anywhere.
Yeah. And I must say, though, I've seen you with people in your ministry here as bishop, and you have a very easy manner. You're very easy to get on with, very, very relational. Is that sociable side important to you?
People are fascinating. Everyone has a story to tell, which is worth hearing and learning from as well, because we always think again that we think in the same way, but we don't. People have insights that other people don't have. If those insights are shared, then in fact everyone's enriched and something new emerges, which is lasting.
And talk to me a bit about your faith. I can imagine, you know, you told us about when you first walked the path and decided to train for the priesthood.
Yeah.
But how has your faith been enriched or challenged, in fact, during the last quarter of a century, pretty much, as a bishop?
It's been challenged. You actually think, I don't know if it's to do with age, but you actually think, does God exist? And is there anything after death? Mm. Those are important questions to ask. And there are opportunities for you to grow in faith. That faith isn't something that we learn from a book. Faith is about a relationship with God. And that relationship with God, God can lead it anywhere. One of my favourite prayers is Charles de Foucault's, Father, I abandon myself into your hands. Do with me as you wish. For whatever you do, I thank you. I'm ready for all, I accept all. That only your will be done in my life.
That is an incredible prayer of surrender,
yeah.
And certainly one to bear in mind. I think when I struggle, that's something I try and bear in mind, especially when it doesn't make sense,
yes,
and things are confusing or make you a little despondent, just to offer that to God.
I think we have to learn to live with chaos,
yeah.
And live with uncertainty.
Especially these days.
Yes.
Now let's talk a little bit about where we are now. You obviously offered your resignation, as it were. And we know there have been health challenges for many years. How have those challenges impacted upon you? And not just physically, but in terms of how you carry out your ministry as bishop?
I sometimes ask myself the question, have I done the right thing, retiring slightly earlier? And the answer I get is, yes, you have. And people have told me I have done the right thing. Because the Parkinson's is a disability. And I shake. And I'm very aware that I'm shaking. I'm probably more very conscious of that. As part of the medication, I was told, it can depress you, but I've never been depressed. Yeah. But I found that I get out of bed more slowly, and I take longer to dress in the morning. Mm. I need a good hour to get ready for the day. It's helped me to have more compassion, perhaps, for those who are sick, those who are terminally ill. You could ask the question, why me?
Yeah.
But why not me? So it hasn't depressed me at all.
No, you've always been very positive. And I think, really, one only has to look at Pope St. John Paul II.
That's right.
In terms of also bearing suffering and the fact that that actually says something to a lot of people, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Have you felt that, or hoped that might help other people suffering?
Well, I've discovered that Parkinson's is quite widespread. Because people then come up to me and say, well, I've got Parkinson's as well. One is more aware of the vulnerable members of society.
And it's really easy, I suppose, to make an over-pious point of, well, has that strengthened your faith, or has that made you more resilient and more mentally strong? Are those things just words, or do you feel that it has strengthened your faith in some way?
It depends on my trust, I'd say, in God, that God knows what God's doing. I'm not saying that God sent me Parkinson's, but I say that you can live through Parkinson's.
Yeah.
I think the Christian message is about life. It's about death, but it's about life coming from death. Again, we're a people of hope, and we can find God. We might think Parkinson's is totally destroying our lives, but actually we're saying God can be found in illness and sickness and vulnerability, and it's maybe more vulnerable in some ways.
And tell me a little bit about how you look back now on those 23 years. Is there an element of satisfaction? Do you feel that you've been able to do the job you've wanted to do overall?
Yes. 23 years have gone very quickly. The first year seemed to go on all along. After that, from year two on till year 23, has gone very quickly. And I give credit to the people of the diocese, because there have been people seeking the face of Christ, and they are a people who are called to be a people of hope. And there is that sense of hope, I think, in the parishes, in the wider communities. It was interesting that the numbers at the Easter Vigil and the Easter Sunday were very high, and then on Ash Wednesday as well. There's something within our society that's searching for meaning, I think.
Yeah.
The sad thing is they don't necessarily find that meaning in the Catholic Church, or expect to find that meaning in the Catholic Church. So I think one of the challenges we've got is to proclaim the gospel in a language that people understand, because it is about the truth of life, because it's about Jesus, who is the way, the truth and the life.
Yeah, very well said. And I must say, looking at the Diocese of Clifton, not only does it mean a lot to me, through your leadership, it's been most of my experience at the diocese has been your leadership. So I'm very grateful for the church in the west of England as it has provided for me, and I'm sure a lot of other people are. What comes next? Looking to a happy retirement.
I said to his people over the weekend when I was at Mass at the cathedral, I'm going to do nothing for 3 weeks. And during that 3 weeks, work out what I'm going to do for the rest of the time.
Yeah.
I'll catch up on reading. I might do a bit of travel. But I also want to be associated with a parish. To the Eucharistic table.
Yeah.
Because I think without one, you just become isolated. And the church is about community, about communion. And our mission is to form communion, not only with one another in the church, but with the whole of creation. It's a more positive move forward.
And much as that's the circle of life in some ways, it's the circle of ministry, isn't it? Because you start as a priest, doing the core job that you felt called to do in the first place. And perhaps to end it in that way,
yeah,
is right and proper.
My predecessor went to a parish when he retired, and down in Western Supermare. And he was there for about 5 years. Then he became too ill and went into St Andrew's nursing home.
But you think that's an important to be back with the people to a certain extent?
I think so, yes. As a bishop, not all bishops may say this, I think there's always a danger that the longer you're a bishop, you could get out of touch with people in their daily lives.
This is the classic and finally question. So if you were to have a single message to the faithful of the Diocese of Clifton after 23 years, what would that be?
Be a people of hope.
In a nutshell.
In a nutshell.
Well, nobody can say they can't remember that. Bishop Declan Lang, thank you so much, not just for your ministry as Bishop of Clifton, but also for all you've given me and the church in these lands. I think we're much the richer for it, so thank you.
Thank you, James.